broadcasting to you from the other side. By which I mean the other side of Sheffield. This is Two Men and a Ghost.
Welcome to Two Men and a Ghost. We're starting the next of our wonderful podcasts. Well, we think they're wonderful. I don't know if you do. Yes, and we're right in the middle of a dilemma because Mike is bringing us a couple of stories and he's done loads of research and he found a wonderful story in the book and now we can't find the right page. So
why? Yes.
Did you find it?
No.
No, never mind.
Really embarrassing.
I can waffle for a bit while you're researching, but I thought it might be interesting to our one listener that they could hear our research on the job, as it were.
That's right, because you see, it's really important that they know that we're not only on the job, but also the amount of effort, the amount of energy that goes into this.
I know. Well, there's a lot of pages in the Ladybird Book of Ghosts. You've forgotten which page it is. So.
I go by the pretty pictures, actually.
I know. By my tally, if I've got it right, this is podcast number 12. This is our third podcast of 2011. We've had a welcome to 2011 podcast. You've listened or endured our experiences at Hag Hill, out and about. This is another just stay at home in the warmth of our houses.
Absolutely.
Telling a few stories. So, have you found it yet, Mike?
No, I'm embarrassed to say. However, as he rambles, what I can do, and this I think will be more important. Actually, I tell you what I'm going to do. What I can do is move into another area. I have two other tales of terror and tales
to delight you.
Thank
Gosh.
You. Right now, absolutely. Now I don't want to scare people, but she's in. Oh, drat! She's back again. That is not what I wanted. Look, can you see her out, please? Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
Was that the hag?
Well, this woman, she comes in with the audience, and honestly, it's really ridiculous. You just say the first thing, and straight away she screams. So, could you do the usual thing, please? Thank you. Great, thank you. Now, can you use the door next time, please? Sorry about that.
Gosh, Mike, I'm shattered.
Right. Okie dokie. Right. One of the key reasons why people enjoy, or why our listener enjoys tuning in to Two Men and a Ghost is obviously we discuss and we talk about areas regarding ghosts. There are two stories that I'd like to bring to the attention of people. The first one is a very interesting one. It's more related to, you know, so often people go on about ghosts and they say, like, you know, we've either seen something or something moved or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it reminded me very much, the tale I'm about to tell reminded me very, very much of the other year when we had the privilege of going into Sheffield City Library. And
we went two or three times, didn't we?
We did indeed. We ended up doing three great features on it, which people can look into on our blog, and I was really thrilled by it. I remember on one occasion, what happened was that they said they had picked up one morning this beautiful smell, this beautiful scent of flowers, and it was drifting in to the reception area, and they didn't know exactly where it was coming from. When you went out, there was no sign of anybody there with flowers. Nobody had been spraying a really rather expensive deodorant or anything like that, or hairspray, you know, anything like that. But it was genuinely there. They didn't know how, didn't know why. And I remember us looking into the history of the area, that at one point, it was once a theatre. And in those days, it would have been very common practice that outside the theatre, you possibly would have had flower sellers who would have been selling their wares and tares to people either going in or coming out having seen the show. So that kind of, in a strange way, provided a link. And
yes,
that is, do spiritual things, do spiritual signatures manifest themselves in the form of a smell, in the form of a scent. Now, that very tactfully leads me on to the first of my story, to tantalize.
Oh.
Whoa. Right, now then. Going back several years ago, my partner, Sarah, she was with her family, and they were on board a plane. Now, at the time, everything seemed okay. The plane had taken off on time. Everything was fantastic. And my partner said, I'm just nipping to the end of the corridor, you know, to the loo or wherever, and back in a moment. And when she was coming back, she became incredibly aware of a particular scent.
What, did someone leave the toilet door open?
Yes, there's somebody sitting there saying, "I can't find the lock. How do you shut those?" You say, but it was absolutely, it was particular to her because the scent was unusual in that it belonged to an elderly lady that the family knew.
And she was on the plane as well.
Ah, now this is the point. She wasn't.
Right.
Now, what happened was that when she went back and sat with her parents, as I say, it's a number of years ago, is this. Forgive me, by saying that, it implies that she's now antique and she will kill me for that. Well, obviously she isn't, and so I've covered my tracks by even saying that. But anyway, she went back and said to her parents, "This is really strange," she said, "but I've just picked up this scent that it really reminds me of this particular lady." It was like she was there. And it was very, you know, it was very known to them because they'd been to visit that lady not only a few days before,
They
would go on a regular basis to see her.
So it was fresh on their mind, really.
Absolutely. So, you know, they knew what she was on about. And they always identified this particular scent with that particular person. They discovered that later on, that at that same time, at that same moment, that lady had in fact died.
Yikes.
Now, I'm left to question, and I put out the question.
I was going to say, how do you explain that?
Exactly. Who knows? I mean, you know, it was one of those things where, let's say, a lot of elderly people, they tend to use either a scent or a perfume that is, they've probably used it for years, and it almost, for them, becomes like a signature. I remember my own late mother, there was always a particular perfume that she wanted. No matter how many times I tried to persuade her otherwise and say, "Look, there are lots on the market, some beautiful ones." No, she would always insist that this is what I want, and that's it. You know, you kind of identify that person with something like that.
Mm.
But it was more so the timing. And the timing was such that...
Yeah, it was that time. But did you say it was more than one person as well?
What, who picked up the scent?
Yeah.
No, just my partner, Sarah.
Just Sarah, yeah.
Yeah, but it was so definite. It was so, I don't know, you know, so clear. And that is why when she sat down next to her parents, she said, "Yeah, I've just picked up the scent. It's definitely her." And they kind of looked round and thinking, you know, again, is it a coincidence? Has she actually boarded the same flight? Which... can happen, you know. I mean, on a side note, I remember many years ago these coincidences where it was quite silly, really. But I was coming back from Egypt, and I'm on a plane, and about the week before going, I'd had a wasp's nest removed from the house, from the loft, and the young guy who did it, I bumped into him on the plane.
Oh, really?
And what, you know, what I find ridiculous was he looked at me, a really nice young guy, and he looked at me and he said, "Hi," he said, "I don't believe it." He says, "What are you doing here?" And I thought, why am I on a plane? Why am I on a plane coming back from Egypt? Why do you think? You know, but coincidence...
Is that a coincidence, or was he a stalker?
I don't know. Or maybe it was one of these who was diligent, and I was making sure I paid him for his services. And he was, or perhaps he had the wasp's nest with him, so that, you know, it was the case... Look, I followed you all the way to Egypt so that if you don't pay me, I'm going to hand you the wasps and I see around now.
That's plausible, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. But so coincidences do happen, and I'm sure we can all think of a million coincidences. But in this particular case, the question, of course, is there such a thing when you come to spiritual signature whereby... a person or something can leave a scent, leave this odor, this aroma, and you walk into a room and you pick it up, and it provokes your thinking or thoughts, you know, thinking, gosh, that does remind me of whatever. So...
I don't know if that's a ghost story or if it says something about how we're connected in some way to the people that we're close to. And maybe when something happens to those people, even though we're maybe even on the other side of the world, that connection means something to us.
I think it's possible on the grounds that, as I'm sure I once said before, when my own father died, that although he was 50 miles away, at the same time of his death, I was in my living room, and I felt like somebody had grabbed me by the shoulders and had shaken me quite violently. Mm. And it was almost electric in sensation. And I was so convinced that someone was in the house that I roamed around the house. I was looking in different rooms and I thought, no, I've made a mistake. But yet I have had this experience. I know this really happened. And it was only when I looked at the clock and it had said 4:10 that when I got the telephone call that evening from the hospital, and they told me about that my father had died, and through course of conversation, I said, look, what time did this happen? And of course, they said 4:10. And that's why, you know, I thought, I'm wondering, is it possible, is it feasible that people do communicate, you know, that moment of departure, do they actually reach out to people that perhaps they cared about or was last on their mind? I don't know.
You know,
maybe this happened on the plane.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories like this, and I wonder if anyone would like to send in their stories, if they have a similar story or something that would just make us think. If you want to get in touch with us at twomenandaghost.blogspot.com, or twomenandaghost.podomatic.com. If they want to leave us a message, we'll read it out. But
absolutely.
No, I've heard stories like this before, but I just don't know how to explain them.
I think the problem is, I have a pretty open mind. I don't like to go down the route of saying there's a ghost around every corner. I think that's ludicrous. I have great, great respect, as you know, for anybody who comes along and says, look, we have a ghost story to share. And maybe it was the very first time that they wanted to share that ghost story because maybe they felt embarrassed. They didn't wish to appear foolish.
Yeah.
So I always totally respect what they're saying to be the truth.
Yeah.
But I think what it comes down to is that there's an awful lot in life that we cannot put answers to. Maybe there aren't any real answers, but we just look perhaps for causes, for effect. You know, as I say, I'm very, very open-minded. And because of certain experiences I've had, particularly years ago, whereby I myself have gone into that category of being a person who has thought, I'd love to share this, but I don't, because people are either going to laugh at me or they're going to think I'm being stupid. But I think it's important to encourage people to say, look, I don't care how ludicrous it sounds, share your story. We want to listen. Forgive me, I'm suddenly sounding. What's coming to my mind actually is, do you remember in the movie Ghostbusters?
Yes.
They put out like a spoof commercial, and I'm not going to get the right line on this one, but don't they say something like, "We're here to believe you," something like that.
That's right.
Like, oh dear. I've just shot myself. How embarrassing.
We could start a paranormal counselling service, couldn't we?
Hey, that's a good idea.
I know.
Hey, you know, that is a great idea.
£30 an hour, we'll listen to your stories, and we'll only laugh later when you've gone.
We could have... Now, how would they pay us, though? That's the point. I mean, do we do cash, checks?
Yeah, or PayPal, anything.
Oh, diamonds.
I know, old comics, anything.
Now, that's what I wanted to ask you, actually.
Oh, dear.
Now then, ghosts
Did you loan me something and I've forgotten?
By the way, I'll say this quickly. Do you remember the time somebody actually lent to me for safekeeping a pile of Beatles memorabilia books.
Oh yes, I know the person. He shares your first name.
Absolutely, and it took him almost 5 years to collect them.
I know. Was it John Lennon's toenails?
Because I recall it was very strange having to meet him in Sheffield, and the agreement I had with him was, I said, "Look, I will meet you at W.H. Smith." In Sheffield, but the rail station. And when he arrived, obviously what he did was he jumped off and then jumped back on a train. And yeah. I was standing around there for ages, not knowing where he was. And eventually I managed to contact him. And I said, "Look, where are you?" I said, "I'm outside Smith's at the rail station."
Oh, I remember this. He was at the wrong one.
Absolutely. Well, he deliberately taken himself off to the one at the Meadowhall Centre. And I said, "Well, why did you meet there when I said, you know, we could meet here?" And he said, "Well, to be really honest with you," he said, I really thought you would have preferred to meet me at a much bigger, grander W.H. Smith's."
Because that's the sort of person you are.
Absolutely, yeah. No small W.H. Smith's for me, I'll have you know.
And Smith's is quite significant to us at the moment.
It is.
The magazine that we're featured in every issue is now on sale in Smith's. It's Haunted magazine.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And each issue contains 4 pages of 2 men and a ghost.
Yes. I'm really thrilled with that mag. It's really well put together. It's really produced in a very, very, very high standard. So now it's thrilling. You know. No, what I was going to say, though, keeping on the subject of publications, now come on, spill the beans time, and that is...
Blech!
Oh, goodness me. Oh, I had to say, you know, that guy, he's come back. Are you all right? No, not really, very well. Are you sure? What do you mean? Well, I keep going back in the... Oh, great. Look, do you mind just cleaning up a bit? I'm sorry about this.
That's horrible, man.
The guy came round. He wanted to see how we did things, you see. And then afterwards, I said to him, I'm sorry about that.
I'm just glad this is an audio podcast and not a YouTube video.
Oh, my God. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah.
Sorry
okay.
about that.
No. Listen, I think I'm just going to have to do something. I'm putting this guy out of his misery. I'm sorry about this. Great stuff. Right, sorry about that. What I was going to say is, supernatural stories and ghosty-type stories, horror stories, not only in books, but have found themselves down the years into various magazines and comic books. And what I was going to ask you, as you are an avid, not comic book writer, but also comic book reader, were you ever drawn or influenced by anything of that nature in comic books?
I was going to say, because we've spoken about this a lot, because they say the stuff that we read and watch when we're kids is really influential, isn't it? And
absolutely.
I wish I could say that I read a lot of academic journals and detailed scholarly works on the paranormal, but actually I read Marvel comics and Fleetway comics and Beano Canopy. So that was really the main influence, was telly and Doctor Who and and comics and stuff. And
of course.
My son's been reading a lot of my old comics, and we've been digging out a whole pile of Core. I don't
know if
it's a Core comic in the 70s. They've got these strips like Higher Horror, which predates Rent-A-Ghost as well. There's,
oh my goodness.
There's a great tradition in English humorous comics of ghosty sort of stuff. Like the Scooby-Doo cartoons as well.
Yes, yes.
But unlike the Scooby-Doo cartoons, where it's always revealed to be trickery in the British humour comics, it was always real. And I remember as well, although I was a fan of the superhero comics, the Marvel ones, I remember, they used to have these really cheaply printed reprints of horror comics.
Yes.
It was Alan something that published them, and you always got them at railway stations and stuff like that, and it was just
all
of this wonderful evocative stuff. It was sort of the Marvel Comics equivalent of Tales of the Unexpected. So
am I going to get the name wrong? Was it Alan Clark?
It was something like that, wasn't it? Alan Clark. He obviously got the right to reprint these really old horror.
That's right.
And then just reprinted them over and over again, ad infinitum.
That's right.
Paper, but almost the cheapness of the paper added to the atmosphere. It was...
that was brilliant.
No, I loved it. It was so evocative. And just sort of reading these comics at night with the smell of the paper and with a really cheap torch for the blankets, it sort of added to the atmosphere, really.
Oh, it was fantastic. Did you ever pick up magazines like Creepy Magazine or Eerie?
Yes, I did. Those were the big magazine type, black and white magazines. There was
Indeed.
As well, wasn't there?
Oh, they were fantastic. I remember what I loved about them, and I love this about any magazine that kind of draws you into it, and that is it wasn't just a case of reading the stories, but like with Creepy Magazine, you were invited to know or introduced to Uncle Creepy. With Eerie Magazine, it was Cousin Eerie.
Right.
And he would, like, be the person... Uncle Creepy was the guy who held everything together in the mag. So when you started a story, he was like the compere of the show, as it were, and he introduced you to it. It was fantastic. I remember, as a young lad, getting those mags, along with Famous Monsters of Filmland.
Yes, I remember that. With all the old 1950s... black and white.
Oh, they were brilliant. They were brilliant. Because a lot of the movies and the ghost stories they had in those days in there, in comparison to what we look at now, aren't, they're so different. They're not as frightening, I would say.
I'm not keen on the new batch of slasher torture type films.
No.
It churns my stomach, really. I'd rather a good... atmospheric, shadowy type of film. That's what I'm into.
I totally agree.
Graphic violence. So the comics for me were the start of all that. Really, it was just so evocative. And
I think what I liked was you had an artist in I think it was in the Creepy Magazine, Bernie Wrightson.
Yes.
And his illustrations were beautiful, and he would illustrate some Edgar Allan Poe stories.
Yeah.
And so his artwork was second to none, absolutely.
If I've got it right, and I've probably got this wrong now, but Bernie Wrightson did the designs for a Stephen King film called Creepshow, which was an anthology film.
Ah, I think you're right, actually.
Sort of in the vein of the 1950s or the Hammer Horror
anthology films,
where they sort of splice together three or four short stories.
Yes. You know, I don't know what your bedroom was like as a boy, but I always remember...
you don't want to know. It's about the same as it is now, really.
But I remember my auntie.
Your bedroom?
I locked her away in there. Yeah, I'm not coming out. But she used to be concerned, because I remember when I was about 14, in the room... I had like a mountain of stuff like Creepy and Eerie magazines, but a lot of posters from kind of like Hammer Horror films.
Yeah.
But also, bear in mind, in those days, we didn't have the kind of memorabilia or, say, models and figures that we have today.
No.
So it was very, very difficult to come by, and if you couldn't come by it, you'd make it up. Mm-hmm. About the most authentic thing I did for, and it was for 6 old shillings, so you can tell it's going back a long time ago now. I remember buying this, like, werewolf's hand that I had sticking out of this box in
my bedroom. Did the werewolf mind at all?
Oh, no. Well, okay, he lost. He was a sore loser, but what happened one night, he changed, and I said to him, shall we have a game of cards? And he lost, and he threw his hand in. So, yeah, that's the way it was. Terrible. Oh, everyone, a gem.
No, mate, that one wasn't worth it.
It wasn't, actually. I totally agree. I think that really kind of bombed, actually.
But that's brought back a memory, because part of it was so unknown and exotic that getting these, trying to hunt down these American comics,
yes,
and reading adverts of these odd toys, on sale for 10 cents and 25 cents,
yes,
on the other side of the world that you knew you could never ever ever get hold of.
The X-ray glasses.
X-ray, which I finally got, and they were such a disappointment.
Oh, you know, I wanted them for years.
Yeah. And these, the sea monkeys, that you just add water and you get sea monkeys.
Well, actually, now you can get them, in fact, only about a couple of years ago.
Right.
They have a different name now, and I can't remember what it is. But we actually ended up getting some.
right, after all these years.
Yeah, amazing. I know not so long ago, Sarah got a set of these, and the idea was, it was quite strange really, and it really makes you think, now I'm thinking about it. The idea was that when you applied the water and you put these little live creatures in, there were supposed to be quite a lot of them, but in this particular case, there was just one large one.
Right.
And it made you think, what happened to the rest?
Maybe.
Did it mutate? Did it eat them? And it grew quite big, actually.
Gosh, the cannibalistic sea monkey.
Yeah, just to take it out on a leash, you know. Come on, Fred. Yeah, it was amazing, you know. Oh, it was amazing, you know. And but I always, for those people who are thinking I would be irresponsible, I always carried like a pooper scoop as well. Because you never know with these things.
Well, I know there's a park near where we live with these massive signs saying no sea monkey poo allowed.
Really?
Yeah, otherwise you get reported to Sheffield Council. So you've always got to take a plastic Sainsbury's bag or something just to scoop up
actually,
sea monkey.
You know, it's funny you say that, because actually I know also, because I picked up a leaflet not so long ago from our local, saying, asking the question rather, you know, have you had your sea monkey injected? You know,
really?
Has it had its injections for that year? Because apparently you have to have them twice a year. Otherwise, they do pick up various things.
Swine flu.
Well, this is it. But I explained to him, I said, well, look, you know, my sea monkey never goes out.
Yeah.
It's a house monkey.
And right.
So they said, well, it's okay. But what I did do, I did actually buy it a nice little collar with Fred on the side.
What, was it a clerical collar, or?
It was a sea monkey collar.
Oh, a sea monkey. No, yes. I don't remember them being sold at the back of Captain Marvel sea monkey collars. It was just sea monkeys. There were no sea monkey appliances in those days. So.
Oh.
So there must be a whole industry now.
I know, this is it, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Sea monkey lunchboxes.
Well, also, the programs like...
Sea monkey thermal underwear.
Have you seen Sea Monkey? And, you know, do you know what it is yet? And then it'll be there working with sea monkeys. And you'll have all these people... And then it moves over into exotic dishes. You know, you'll get Jamie Oliver doing, you know... now, this weekend...
Chef.
Absolutely, it'll be saying, but you know, the best thing to do if you're lost at what to do regarding feeding your friends this weekend, you know, we have sea monkey fritters, sea monkey pie, I don't really know how I got onto this. Now my mind's kind of, and it starts. I'm crashing.
We're talking about the lure.
I'm crashing.
No, it was being 8, 9, 10, 11, growing up in the 60s or the 70s, the lure of almost the forbidden, the exotic, the mysterious.
Did you have a shrunken head?
Well, no, I went to the school doctor and they sorted it out, so...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. But I do remember these adverts. That's right, I remember now. There was one toy I managed to get hold of, and it was a spooky money box where it was a coffin.
Yes.
I think it was an advert in the back of one of these comics.
Yes.
And you put your 5p coin or whatever it was, and then this sort of luminous plastic hand would come out and grab the coin. And
yes.
Back into the coffin. So
best thing I found, you know, and it wasn't a toy, but I did have it in my horror room, shall we say, and that is, I remember going for a walk in, I think it was somewhere in the Dales, and amazingly, and it was all intact, I found a ram's skull.
Really?
I was amazed, and I remember bringing it back home, cleaning it up and then hanging it on the wall. Which
How old were you?
I was about 14 or 15 at the time.
Right.
And it was brilliant with that and all my horror stuff around the room and horror mags. Yeah. Oh, it was good. All good fun.
Well, explain the appeal, Mike. What was the appeal? Was it imagination? Was it the unknown?
I think what it is, and I think what makes it different today, actually, and I do agree with what you said about how a lot of the horror movies of today, they put the focus more on something that is really horrible and grisly,
yeah,
as opposed to a good story and an interesting character. In those days, I think what appealed to me, and particularly with the comic books, was taking a lot of traditional horror characters, whether it be Frankenstein, Dracula...
Yeah, the universal monsters. And
precisely.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. They were all good fun. I'm very much like you in that those certainly appeal to me. What didn't appeal, and certainly doesn't appeal to me now, is when you get the typical slasher-type movie.
No, that's not interesting.
I don't like those. I can't see the reason for them, if I'm really honest. So, no, I'm not over keen on those.
I think I'm not a prude, but the line I draw is I like my horror films or my scary films to be about fantasy characters.
I agree.
Rather than real people. Although I do like the Psycho series of movies.
Yes. What about Alien?
Alien's fine. Alien's just... the take on a haunted house. Instead of a haunted house, you have a spaceship in space where they're all trapped
exactly. On
the ship with a monster attacking them. Now that's fun. That's like a ghost train, but a science fiction version.
It is. I think what's great about those movies, it's like a roller coaster ride. You get excited, but you're let down gently at the end, and you've enjoyed the ride. So, you know, they're good fun. Speaking of aliens, now, I know we're called Two Men and a Ghost, but sometimes people might encounter something that you can't explain. The whole essence of Two Men and a Ghost is, as I've often said, we seek that which cannot be found.
Well, I can't explain why people actually listen to us, so that's part of what we're about. Yeah, people
really?
Listen to us, yeah.
Wow, and it's me thinking... And I've got it wrong. Here's me thinking we were the Father Ted of the paranormal universe.
Who's Father Jack?
Oh, that'll be me. Drink! sorry. Nuns! And if you are listening, and if you happen to be a nun, I do apologize.
Yes.
None today, thank you. Yes. What happened was that... now, here's a story I would like to relay.
Now, we're going to finish, this is great, we're going to finish on a high. We're going to finish with another one of Mike Casabrid's patented scary stories. And
absolutely.
We'll close the podcast with this story.
Absolutely. Right. Now, this is a story that is strange. However you want to view it, whether from a supernatural level, whether you want to view it from a science fiction level, it doesn't matter. The emphasis is that this is strange and we would all feel like this. For reasons of protecting the source, for reasons of this nature, I am being, shall we say, tactful of how I'm going to portray the story. Is how it goes. We have a situation where two people decide one day to take a drive into the Derbyshire area.
So this is a true story?
It is a true story.
Right.
Whilst driving through the Derbyshire area, they become aware of a very bright light that is following them, kind of almost hovering over them. And
it wasn't blue and flashing on and off.
No, that's the thing. No, that's what usually happens to you and me, actually. Yeah. You know? Oh, there they are, lads. Come on, let's go get them. Oh, grief. You know, yeah, it always happens. As, yeah, there we are. We're driving along, or we're trying to do another podcast. And yeah. In the background. Yeah, hello, guys. We're here.
I know. I think I said that in 2010 we nearly got arrested 3 times. Shall we try and break that record this year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We got our posters up all over police stations now. Yeah. Wanted for being insane.
Yeah.
So we've got
a bounty on our heads. Or is that a crunchy?
Well, yeah, I don't. They said to me, actually, look, if you don't behave, we're gonna put a bounty on your head. And I said, well, chocolate gives me migraine attack. Okay, sir, never mind. It's a packet of crisps. I said, thank you. So what happened was that they get out the car and to see what this light is, and suddenly. Now, here's how it gets all strange. These two people lose time.
Gosh.
Just time. And when they do eventually come around, one person in particular is clearly showing signs of being really seriously ill, and the other person gets them to hospital. They're showing signs of, like, severe migraine attacks or whatever.
How did they know they lost time? Did they just look at the clock one time and then another time? And
I should imagine, yes. I should imagine that would have been the case. But when they get checked out, they're taken to hospital. One person in particular, the doctors have to check out, and they notice they're getting very severe nosebleeds.
Mm.
Now, this is where it gets strange. What happens is that they have to very quickly operate on this person because, you know, it's obviously looking serious. They've got severe migraine attack. They've got a nosebleed. Who knows what it could be? So they've got to x-ray the person, check them out. And here's how it gets strange. What they remove from very high up from the person's nose is a very small kind of metal appliance.
Wow.
That cannot identify.
I thought you were going to say bogey or something.
But they can't identify it. Now,
well, wasn't there an episode of X-Files about this where they find metal implants or something from people
that's
who
right.
feel they've been abducted?
Actually, I do remember that, funnily enough. Yeah, you're quite correct. Well,
so has there been any explanation for that at all?
No, all I can say is I checked into this, and as I say, for personal reasons and for, shall we say, sensitive
yes.
reasons, you know, I mean, I thought it was a story worth telling, but, and many will be saying, well, who were they? What were they doing there? And blah, blah, blah. And no, my attitude, and I know yours is the same.
Yeah. But because people have these experiences.
Be open about
it. They're scared that people are going to laugh at them. And,
precisely.
Yeah.
But the person who'd had the operation, or had this removed, for quite a period of time afterwards, you know, there was a lot of anxiety, which understandably there would be. But the difficulty was they couldn't explain why it was that 1 minute they are peaceably driving out, then the next minute there's this blinding light that's over them. It stops when they stop. They suddenly lose track on time. They don't know where they are. They become aware that something's going on, but they can't say exactly what it is. And then, obviously, one person ends up in a, quite a serious situation physically, and has to have this removed. I have no idea what was actually put down on their medical records, because obviously I wouldn't have any idea, as it would be confidential. But all I do know is that obviously whatever they removed couldn't be identified. And that is, I'm not saying this always happens to people. What I am saying is that that isn't the first time. There's been numerous occasions.
I've heard stories like that as well. So,
It just happened.
I think we'll finish the podcast there on that high. We've gone from strange smells to sea monkeys to nosebleeds, with comics and bounty bars on the way. So,
and don't forget the bounty on the head.
And the bounty on the head, or the Twix, or anything.
Absolutely. So,
We'll leave people not wanting more, and we'll look forward to see. We're not sure what we can do in the next podcast, whether we'll be out and about or in the comfort of our own homes. So doing a Skype again, but we look forward to seeing you in the realms of Two Men and a Ghost. So goodbye, dear listeners.
Take care. Lovely to hear you. Bye.
Bye.
Special thanks to Spike Nesmith for scary voice and sound effects at the beginning of this podcast. Thanks to Ever Desireless for their atmospheric music called Assembly Line Romance. Thank you for listening. Thanks to The Lizard, and we hope to join you soon for the next eventful podcast of Two Men and a Ghost.